Hi, I'm Nathan Scott, and thank you so much for tuning in to Sunday Morning. I'm speaking with a very interesting gentleman who has a very interesting line of work today. His name is Mike Lamison, and he is the puppeteer as well as the director of Black Cherry Puppet Theater. Mike, thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So for anyone who is not really sure or didn't know that we had a puppet theater in Baltimore, can you tell me a little bit about how the theater was founded and what it does?
Yes, well, Black Cherry Puppet Theater was founded by four students at Maryland Institute College of Art way back in 1980. And during that period, the city of Baltimore sponsored puppet theaters to go around to recreation centers during the summer. So basically, we began puppeteering to make money and to pay our way through college.
And so have you been involved with the puppet theater all throughout its existence?
Yes, I helped found the theater. Mm-hmm. And for several years, it was just a very loose collective of artists and performers. And then as we got more organized, became a co-director, and then just through the years, became executive director.
Now, Maryland, some people may not be aware, actually has a fairly rich history when it comes to puppetry.
Very rich, actually.
Jim Henson, yes. In particular, from the University of Maryland.
Jim Henson, and here in Baltimore, a family, Paul's Puppets, was very prominent through the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and continued, you know, up into the 70s.
So can you tell me a little bit about how you in particular got involved with this legacy of puppetry performance within the state?
Well, I'm originally from Pennsylvania, actually a farm, and puppetry was always a mystery for me because I never saw live performance. You know, I grew up with Lamb Chops, Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. Sesame Street came a little bit after me. So I saw this stuff on television, but I'd never really seen it live. And the idea of marionettes, the puppets that are controlled by strings, was basically a mystery to me. And when I came to visit Maryland Institute as a student, I ran into somebody who had been doing this touring program. And I was like, wow, that would be a lot of fun to try to do. And, you know, we got to be friends, and he's like, hey, let's start a puppet theater. And not knowing absolutely nothing about puppetry, we went to the library and found books on puppetry. And basically, when people asked how I learned the craft, it was library books here at Enoch Pratt Library in Baltimore.
Which, you know, is an absolutely fantastic way to learn a number of things. I mean, I spent a ton of time at the library when I was a kid, and that's one of the ways that I found out about puppets and how they work, and also the fact that there are different types of puppets. Can you tell me a little bit about the various ways in which puppet performers can operate their... what would be the word for puppets? Is there a separate word, or would they be considered performers as well?
Well, here in this country, you know, we refer to all types of puppets as basically puppets. In Europe, they use a bit of different terminology. And in live puppetry, we generally say there's five types of puppets, which are determined by how you manipulate the puppet. So, for instance, if you directly use your hands, it's a hand puppet, like a sock puppet or a finger puppet, or an object puppet. Then another type of puppet would be a rod puppet. If you manipulate the puppet, usually from underneath it, using rods, it's a rod puppet. Marionettes, which is the type of puppetry that I specialize in, are controlled by strings, usually from above.
And those are the sort that, if you're thinking of like Pinocchio, would fall generally in
line with that. Or in The Sound of Music, the... Lonely Goat Herd.
Right.
That was Bill Baird's marionettes there. Then another type of puppet is a shadow puppet. If you, you know, just have a light source, put your hand up and start making shapes, you have a shadow puppet. Finally, body puppets. The puppeteer is inside the puppet wearing it. And I'm sure you can guess some very famous body puppets.
Right. We were challenging each other before the show to see who could pronounce Snuffleupagus.
And you did it again. Congratulations.
But characters like, I'm not even going to try saying that again, the woolly elephant or Big Bird.
Big Bird's my favorite.
Yeah. And even that's sort of a hybrid thing where even though the puppeteer is wearing the costume, the head is still being operated using the hand style.
Well, you know, it's funny, the Sesame Street puppeteers, it's amazing how they do their puppets because, for instance, like Big Bird, Carol Spivey, the puppeteer, basically, his hand's straight up in the air inside of that puppet's head. There's no indirect mechanism making that head work.
Right.
That said, some of these puppets can be hybrids between different types. Like, for instance, a lot of times people will say something like Kermit or Elmo, where in the case of Kermit, Jim Henson's hand was in the puppet's head, and then the puppet's hands were manipulated by rods. But we would, you know, I'd still call that basically a hand puppet, even though he was using rods.
Right. So it sounds like the primary thing that determines how you classify a puppet is what means you're using to operate its face or the most expressive part of its body.
Yeah, what you see most of. And, you know, this is me saying that. You talk to another puppeteer and they're going to totally disagree with me. But, you know, since you're interviewing me, this is the way it is.
All right. Well, we'll take that as gospel then.
All right.
So, you know, talking about puppets and the history that they have in Maryland, Black Cherry Puppet Theater was recently honored for, I think this has been a couple of times, by the Maryland State Arts Council.
The Cherry Adler Award, yeah. We're really quite honored to third-time recipient.
And so can you tell me what you received the award for?
One of the, I think, unique things about Black Cherry is that we're incredibly committed to our neighborhood and our neighborhoods around Baltimore and the state. And we run several after-school programs and just do all kinds of stuff out in the community, usually using puppetry. And even though the Cherry Adler Award is for excellence in children's theater, what they recognize is how we are unique in what we do in the community. Each year, anywhere from, 300 to 600 kids make pretty complicated rod puppets in schools and actually perform shows that they've usually written. And then we do after-school programs where in 10 sessions, kids will make a puppet and put together a performance and then perform that show for their community.
So one thing that I've read a lot in interviews with people who have worked on programs like Sesame Street or other things with, you know, national exposure that deal with puppets, they've talked a lot about how when there are kids on the set that, you know, to some degree you do make sure to stay in character because you don't want to spoil the illusion for the kids, but also that these puppets have a very unique way of reaching kids. They'll open up to puppets and express things to them in ways that they wouldn't to, you know, an adult or even another kid. Have you seen anything like that? Ways in which puppetry lets the kids open up in ways that would otherwise be impossible?
Well, I think theater in general, we have a term called suspension of disbelief. And puppetry in particular, and especially marionettes, because it's not direct, marionettes are not directly connected to the puppeteer. So they really exist in their own little world. And once the lights go down, the audience is drawn into that world of the puppet. They focus, and it's a different scale. It's usually a smaller scale. So, and we have basically a full theater. So there's this little world where the actors can do anything. They can fly. I've had tree puppets, airplane puppets. One kid built a wave puppet one time. Huh. And then you get like puppets for emotion, you know, anger. And I've also, after shows, had people come up to me, even people who knew me quite well, and they'll see the puppets backstage and they'll be like, those aren't the puppets you performed with. They're too small. They're too little. And there's this thing that happens where they blow the puppets up in size so that they become life size in their own minds. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the beautiful things about what I think marionettes in particular, and I am a bit biased in that because I'm a marionettist, but we do have, just like a closed stage where it's just the puppets. Or even a hand puppet, which, quite attractive, but they're still connected to the puppeteer's hand. Mm-hmm. So you have, it gives you more of a sense of scale of the puppet.
So you use these puppets for educational purposes in some of these programs as well, so the kids aren't just being exposed to puppetry as a as an art form, as something that they themselves can pursue, but also to teach other things with them. Can you tell me a little bit about what it looks like when the puppetry and the marionettes are integrated into other curriculum?
Well, and that's the key, is curriculum integration, project-based learning. We're not using puppets to teach with. We're not like holding a puppet in front of a classroom and doing it that way. We immerse the students into the process of making a show. And when you get into a process or a systematic type of learning, it incorporates the entire curriculum into the project. So a class, let's say a social studies class, they may take a topic from history. And, we've had shows done about the American Revolution or how settlers first came to Maryland. So they have to study. You have to understand your topic to write about it, to write a script about it, and to communicate about it. Then they have to build their puppets. So they have to follow basically a scientific process. Mm-hmm. It's like a recipe. A recipe is a scientific process, when you're cooking. Making their puppet, then they have to work together as a team, they have to rehearse, and then they finally have to perform. So you have, every step of the way in an experienced teacher's hand, it can be tied back to the curriculum. That said, everything they do in making the show is a type of assessment. So we have many teachers who will have our residency at the end of the school year, and they'll use it to assess what their students have learned throughout the year. Or it may be, topic-based, like I said, American Revolution. Lately, we've had a lot of shows about bullying and, social issues, which I think are really quite effective because they're communicating it back to their audience.
And, as you mentioned before, being able to put yourself through this sort of creative process, to work with others, to pull in information from a variety of different disciplines, this is really one of the things that the arts is best at, is taking all of this seemingly disparate information and merging it into a cohesive whole, something that's beautiful, something that's expressive, and something that shows that, maybe all these different parts of life are more connected to each other than they may appear on the surface.
Yeah, community. I mean, the model that I studied for an artist is, a visual artist, goes into their studio, creates beautiful things, has a show, and then invites their community in to see it. Then after graduating from Maryland Institute, I got involved with theater. And it was a totally different world where it's a collaborative world where, many people work together to create a thing, and that just opened up a whole new thing, a way of looking at the artistic process and how the process can be used in the community. So, I mean, we started out touring Baltimore City Recreation Centers, doing a silly little puppet show, and we just saw how it affected, different groups of kids in Baltimore City. And then performing at festivals, seeing how, the Sweet Bohemian Festival, which has been going on for over 30 years, but seeing how people come back over and over. And this, the last festival, a man came up to me and, you know, asked, did you used to perform in front of the market? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, you know, when I was like six, I saw you guys performing, and now I brought my kids to see it, you know? And then also with building our theater and putting it in the neighborhood that we did, it's become a focal point of the neighborhood, and it's really helped to build, you know, a sense of community over there. I'll often have people come up to me and say, you know, we think it's really cool to have a puppet theater in our neighborhood, and that's one of the reasons we moved here. Hmm. I've never been there, but I think it's really cool. You know, I'm like, well, you really got to come and see what we do.
You got to go. You got to support it. And I think people have a tendency to assume that things are going to be where they're at forever. But if these sorts of things are to stick around, then, you know, they need to be supported in the work that they're doing today, not tomorrow, but, you know, well, as it exists now.
And that's so true. I mean, even, you know, Black Cherry with its nearly 40-year history, we've been hanging by a string, so to say. You know, and it, I don't know how we've done it, but we've done, we've managed to do it. And I don't think we're unique. No matter how successful an arts group may appear and may be, it still needs, you know, we always need monetary support, but we really need the audience and building audience and having an audience come into different community-based or neighborhood-based art programs.
So if you're just tuning in, my name is Nathan Scott. You're listening to Sunday Morning, and I'm speaking with Michael Lamison. He is a puppeteer as well as the director of Black Cherry Puppet Theater, which we just talked about the building that you have set up in Baltimore. Can you tell me a little bit about that building, what it looks like before or during a show?
Sure. Well, you know, there's an interesting story behind the building. We had been... Black Cherry had been together 10 or 15 years, and we'd gotten to a point where we realized we needed a space that was our own, and we were very connected to Southwest Baltimore neighborhood, popularly referred to as Suebo, and we did a survey of empty buildings over there, and there was these two buildings were basically falling down that we kept coming back to, and we're like, they're in too bad a shape. There's no way we could take these buildings. But they became available for next to nothing. And it turned out the city had condemned them and was were going to bulldoze them. And we're like, okay, stops here. We're going to take these two row homes right beside Holland's Market, and we're going to turn it into a puppet theater. And again, you know, we were talking earlier about neighborhood. The neighborhood really banded around us and supported it. And when we had our zoning hearing, because it's, the area is zoned for not for performance. So we got a zoning variance. And 20, you know, it's like 15 people from the neighborhood showed up at the hearing to support it. And nobody opposed it. So we took these two Baltimore row houses, consolidated the spaces, and it's now a black box theater and a workshop, rehearsal space. And then we also had two vacant lots next to the theater that we've turned into a outdoor performance space. And we have workshops out there also. That was 15, 20 years ago. And at this point, we are now renovating those buildings again. We never really finished the construction. We got them consolidated. I mean, imagine two buildings that were falling down, the amount of work that we had to do
to
get it usable. So we basically got it to the point where we could move in, use the space, and then that was it. So now we're, we have a capital campaign going where we're going to finally finish our buildings and turn it into, you know, more of a useful theater for us.
And, you know, looking at pictures of some of the puppets that are used at the theater, they look, you know, just amazingly well put together, whether that it looks like they're made out of some sort of paper mache. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, it depends. Again, it depends on the type of puppet. But, for instance, the marionettes, the heads are, and sometimes the bodies are made from either conventional paper mache. And when I say conventional, what I'm talking about is layering sheets of paper. And we also use a type of paper clay, which is also a type of paper mache, mm-hmm. but we'll use that to model the heads with.
Yeah.
And the hands. The thing is that, you know, since you're holding these things out mm-hmm. at arm's length, they have to be pretty light.
Right.
So we try to use the lightest materials possible. And then the bodies are made from wood. Right.
And there's one group dressed. In particular I'm looking at. It's sort of very Baltimore in that it reminds me of Edgar Allan Poe or Vincent
yeah.
Price. Well, I mean, it stands out.
Well, it's we are in Baltimore. I mean, that's a show that we did at Creative Alliance several uh-huh. years ago, commissioning show. And, I think Poe played into that a lot. Yeah. It was called Between Means, and it was based on a lot of early American music,
yeah.
Early blues music. So it was very Poean, as we like to say, but it was also, you know, devil at the crossroads kind of
right.
thing. I think the picture that you're looking at is the devil and his ghoulies.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very atmospheric, and especially mm-hmm. in a black box theater where, as you mentioned, the what you're seeing on stage mm-hmm. is
right.
completely separate from the rest of the theater. It looks like its own world that you're peeking
yeah,
into and being invited into.
And it's an interesting topic because we were, you know, I was describing marionettes as being a very contained type of theater.
Right.
But in that case, mm-hmm. the puppeteers actually came out of the marionette stage and had these longer control rods so the ghoulies could fly around.
Ooh.
And, here, you know, we talk a lot about systems in theater.
Right.
And here, using lighting, we were able to isolate the puppets from the puppeteers.
Hmm.
So, and the audience, you know, again, it's like this collaboration and a suspension of disbelief where, you know, the audience focuses on the puppet.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the puppeteers are dressed in black. Often we'll wear gloves and hoods, too, so that we sink into
mm-hmm.
the, you know, more into the background. So they do really focus out the puppeteers.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun as a puppeteer, not so much in a theater setting, but
mm-hmm.
more on the street or at a festival. We can watch the audience watching us. So
right.
that can be a lot of fun to see people's reactions.
And it's
shows.
Sort of, it goes right in line with the idea of puppets themselves as being sort of a magical thing. There's definitely an element of stage magic and, you know, misdirection in place as far as
sure.
getting the audience to focus on the puppet and not on the person operating it.
Well, and it's all, yeah, we call it the magic of puppetry. And often
yeah.
some of the stuff that I like to do can be pretty complicated.
Uh-huh.
People, I'm always happy to share how I do things, but
right.
there's some things that are just so complicated that
uh-huh.
I'll say, well, we just have to call that the magic of puppetry and leave it at that.
So for anyone who's tuning in, hearing all of this and wanting to, you know, see what it's all about and you know, maybe even see one of the shows, what are some of the upcoming projects that you have at
right.
the theater?
Well, first of all, if folks want to find out what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
there are two easy ways. Like us on Facebook
mm-hmm.
or go to our website, blackcherry.org, and we have a calendar there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also sign up for our mailing list. And that may be getting the email list, the email newsletter
right.
is one of the best ways to find out what we're doing. We have a couple events coming up in the next couple of months that are quite
mm-hmm.
interesting. In August, we have two of our favorite clowns coming to the theater. Not really puppetry, but clowns, Camelita
mm-hmm.
and Pepito are coming on August 18th. Then in September, we kick our season off
mm-hmm.
with, I think the first thing we have planned is we've been invited by the Central Branch of the Enoch Pratt Library, which
mm-hmm.
they are reopening, their official
right.
reopening after something like 3 years of renovation.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, and boy, did they do a beautiful job in that place. It was beautiful to start with. But we'll be performing,
mm-hmm.
I think, only one show, but then we'll have puppet-making workshops with
mm-hmm.
So you can bring the kids and make puppets. Then later in the month, we have a series we call the Puppet Slamwiches,
mm-hmm.
which are for adults. Puppets are not necessarily for kids. So,
right.
Five times a year, we have a Puppet Slamwich, which is short form puppetry, 10 minutes or less. We'll have like 6 or 8 shows, 10 minutes or less, for adults. That said, there's nothing where older kids are certainly welcome to come, unless it says for adults only. Then,
right.
Then you're on your own as a parent. I take no responsibility. And October is pretty exciting, too, mm-hmm. because that's Free Fall Baltimore here mm-hmm. in the city. And we'll have hopefully 3 days, 3 Sundays of free puppet shows mm-hmm. and puppet making workshops at the theater. Again, if you want to find out about this stuff, just mm-hmm. check out our website, like us on Facebook, and sign up for our newsletter.
And could you remind me of the website one more time?
That's Black Cherry, all one word, blackcherry.org.
All right. Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
So if you've just been tuning in, I've been speaking with Michael Lamison, a puppeteer and the director of Black Cherry Puppet Theater. The website, if you'd like to find out more info, is blackcherry.org. I'm Nathan Scott. You're listening to Sunday Morning, and we'll be right back after this.